Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, hello, what's happening, everybody? This is Citizen Payne on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and this is it's 8 o'clock again on the Wednesday. I'm sorry, I got a little confused because I think another call was coming into this line, so that's why I was a little bit confused. But it's November 6th on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You've reached the Kay Thompson Live Show. I am the one that's known as the son, Citizen Payne. My mother's on assignment in heaven, and this is Wednesday. So we're going to talk about a few things. We're going to bring in our co-host, my brother Byron Saunders, the historian. You like that? And legendary newsman Wayne Gilman. You know, last night, a couple of things on the top of my dome. Last night, they had what they call, are calling a blue wave in Kentucky and Virginia. Really kind of nice. Particularly, I liked the Kentucky one. When you think about it, it was the governor's race. And if you happen to catch all the trash talk that governor, the incumbent Republican governor, was talking about, it's even a more of a savory win, let's put it like that, because the dude was talking so much trash when one particular NBC reporter was talking to him, asking him if he's been around, if he's been paying attention to the news, because the reporter basically wanted to know, it's, you know, state race. Why are you bringing the impeachment subject matter into your race? And the man went on to explain, you know, if you haven't noticed, well, pompously, of course, you know, it's been going on and it's on people's minds and everybody thinks this is a sham. So, of course, come today, that guy lost. But, of course, being the Republican that he is, he's going to challenge it and have a recount or whatever it is, thing that they allow them to do down there in Kentucky. But the funny thing is, that dude was lost with all the trash talk. And particularly when you think about Trump did an ad for him, and I believe even showed up the election eve for him. So it's an even better win when that kind of happens, you know, because I've been saying for a while, and I've noticed since the Bush administration days, that what these people do is, like most criminals do, they accuse the innocent people of doing the exact thing that they're doing. And Andy Beshear is the projected apparent winner with 49.2% of the vote, and Bevin, the incumbent, 48.8%, who refuses to go down as they do. Got a lot of other things I want to talk about. Certainly impeachment is here. So is Harriet Tubman, the movie about Harriet Tubman. Got a whole bunch of other stuff. But let's bring in my brother Byron Saunders and get his take on at least the initial blue wave. And we're going to jump off into Virginia, which was the state Democrats taking control of the state, which is even better in terms of if you know anything about congressional lines being drawn and the like. That helps us a lot more in Virginia. But let's bring in the historian, brother Byron Saunders. That's a new one for you, Byron. How you doing, brother?
Well, how are you, my friend? I'm here down here in D.C. I guess you can call the D.C. ground zero with all the political activities happening all across the country. Continuing the blue wave is indeed happening. Not only in Kentucky, in Virginia, also in Kansas. The blue wave has hit the state of Kansas, in which the governor-elect, Democrat, won by 10 points over the previous front-runner, Kobach, who you may recall was also chair of the president's voter suppression committee. Of course, they couldn't find any all across the country, so they disbanded. And this gentleman got beat by a woman who beat him by 10 points. So you see, the blue wave is not just in Kentucky and not just in Virginia.
That's when they didn't talk about that too much on the news and the national.
They didn't talk about that one, Eric.
That's right. Whatever they don't talk about something on the news or pay attention to it, you know, people that watch the news and things like that, they're not the end all be all. You gotta, you know, they got access to information that you might not have. You got people in the, but you gotta, you know, when you hear things.
reason why they didn't mention Kansas in with the other two. I don't know why. I'm sure it'll become apparent sooner or later.
Well, quite interesting was the fact that the you may also remember the Kansas state as it the state of Kansas itself was a test state for the Koch brothers. They implemented their austerity program almost to the point where the state came very close, if not in fact indeed went into bankruptcy because of the financial mess that the Koch brothers put the state in relative to their economic concepts and agenda. Part of that austerity program that they tried to right-wing conservatives tried to push through before, and of course now they no longer can be considered the party of conservative economic values after creating a $1.3 trillion deficit with tax cuts. Things that make you go, relative to that. But yes, Kansas, Virginia, and even the surprise Mississippi, even though the Democrats didn't win, they came within 7 points, I believe, in a state that was won by President Trump by almost 30 points. So there's a huge, huge earthquake of political activity all across the country. And here's the kicker. They didn't say it with Kentucky. It was the black vote that turned out by major numbers that helped to swing the state's from a GOP governor to a Democratic governor. So this is significant. Again, our votes do matter.
Yeah, and there's also a county, a couple of counties in Delaware and I think, Delaware and Maryland or maybe Delaware, several counties that went Democratic, a whole bunch of them that had been held by Republicans since like the Civil War. So that's something that's impressive. But let's bring in our legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman, to get his opinion on the election and the other news. Hey, Wayne, how you doing this evening?
Greetings, everyone, and greetings to you, Byron, in the septic tank.
Yes, sir.
And I have to say that I am so pleased. You know, I'm at a point where I want to do the baby shark, even though I'm a New York Yankee fan. It just, you know, I just knew the momentum would eventually swing, and I don't have the statistical information in front of me, but from what I've been able to glean, and just by the pushback by the Republican Party, some of the things they're saying, and this media blitz that Orange Man's son is doing, the bearded one who speaks at a million miles a second. You know, he talks over all his interviews. I'm talking about Donald Trump Jr. It, you know, the information that he puts out makes no sense. I would be embarrassed if it were my son trying to defend what ill-gotten gains I would have done, hypothetically, if I were in his father's situation. You know, they're scrambling, and the moment of truth is soon beckoning. In another week, I believe in another week and a half, they're going to start the formal congressional hearings that all of us will be able to see, you know, what goes on. And I still fear that there is a closet, there's a pocket of supporters out there, you know, people that show up at these rallies that he seems to, you know, it's almost like an orgasm when you see him. And then forgive me for even using that as a comparison, but when you see this man speak and pontificate in front of all these people, you can only imagine what's going on inside of him mentally, you know? And he thrives on that. But I'm so glad with the turnout, even though it's an off election year. It just shows that a lot of people are fed up, and it's affecting the burbs. All of a sudden now there's talk of the burbs being more blue than red. And we're talking about white, college-educated women, from what I've been able to glean, that are just sick and tired of the nonsense. And that coupled with the progressive black presence that we have at the polls, hopefully will make a difference and hopefully tune down some of the nonsense that we've been hearing. But I just feel this man's not going to give up without a fight. I mean, to the point where even if it's proven
you think?
That he is, you know, worthy of impeachment, that, you know, it's like he would rather see a civil war occur first before he leaves office. And I, just looking at his son this morning, hysterical. I mean, you know, I don't know what more to say. I don't know if you guys had a chance to check out any of his interviews, but hysterical.
Yeah, I heard that he said whatever he said, but, you know, I mean, we think about the one where he was talking about when he said, I wish I was a rich guy's kid where I could, talking about Hunter Biden, when he was on Fox talking about he wish he was a rich guy's kid and he could go over to foreign countries, that nonsense. So, you know, clearly when you're that far removed from reality or you're trying to lie to everybody so much, but the lie is so great, the leap of faith, the leap of disbelief that you want everybody to make is so great, people start to look at you like you're nuts. And I think
that's
certainly
what's
with,
going on.
Yeah, especially with them. And just look at all the people who support them at those rallies and go crazy. Like, they're kind of like in a cult, man, and they're not well. Clearly they're not well, and if you just get a general opinion of what some of them believe, but you know, how they blindly follow this guy. I mean, regardless. I mean, so this week we had, Sondheim, Ambassador Sondheim, suddenly get his memory jogged. Suddenly get his memory jogged by the memory of the other people who actually decided to tell the truth, you know. And even he was saying, you know, that it was whatever it was, this, once upon admitting that it was the quid pro quo, was that he really didn't know who, what, why, or where, you know. So what's becoming apparent is that Trump and his boy Rudy had this whole plan, and they got the Rose shadow foreign policy that's going on with the Ukraine, and they're not even telling, you know, the career diplomats or the people whose actual jobs it is what's going on, you know. And now these things are going to be public next week, which should be good. I really was looking forward to him reading them out loud. You know, for me, these people are finally starting to call the things what they are and say they're not transcripts, they're a summary, you know, and point out the fact that even that it says on that transcript, clear as day, the caution, this is not verbatim of the conversation. This is where the Democrats always seem to be able to snatch a victory from the jaws of defeat, you know, smash defeat from the jaws of victory. Because things that seem so easy, such a slam dunk to prove, the Democrats, they just let information and big points and big points of the story, plot points of the story slip by without making it clear, crystal clear to the public of what those plot points are. And you kind of have to do that, you know, if you want to build this case. And the Democrats, like I've always said, with their PR, as usual, that their PR is the worst. They are not able to communicate broadly enough to the American people and the public, you know, these facts that when people hear about them, they're appalled. And for some reason, the Democrats can never capitalize on these instances, never. And it's unbelievable to me that constantly, like the New York Giants, they find a way to lose. Gentlemen?
Yeah, I lost you for a minute there.
Yeah, like I don't know. Go ahead, Byron.
I was just going to say that ultimately what we're looking at, and going back to the opening blue wave notion and idea, is that, yes, there is a disturbance in the universe, as Yoda would say, because the body politic has got, and what they're saying as a referendum to what's going on in our nation is that they're sick and tired of all the crap, and they're going to show by way of their vote that they're going to make these changes happen. first and foremost, right there in Mitch McConnell's backyard. He can say what he wants to say, even with the first African-American attorney general, who is a Republican, got voted in downstate elections, gave Republicans big wins, but the governor's the prize. And if the governor's office goes blue, that tells you a lot about the respect that they have for the GOP of the state that gets a lot of welfare, gets a lot of government contracts, and ultimately the head of the Senate, the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, is in trouble. He's running in a lot of water here that can sink his ship very, very clearly, his and his wife's shipping family, because they are she's from China, and they're getting some of the better part of the tariff restrictions, so that it's not hurting her business or her family's shipping concern. This is the kind of corruption that is ongoing in this country, and the public is about to become the witness to the facts and the truth about the depth of this corrupt administration and why it has to go. And Tuesday's referendum is part of what's about to swamp the nation. Yes, it's starting off a little bit slow, but last night was not just a slow start. That was a kick in the butt start. And if it can continue, you're going to see them sweep out the vermin, flush the cesspool, because we need to get rid of the stench that is emanating from this city, okay?
I have a quick question to ask both of you, because I hadn't had a chance to follow up on the young lady, woman of color, who won the Kentucky attorney general seat. Is she a card-carrying Republican? Because sometimes people
are forced.
No,
this is a gentleman. This is a gentleman. Yes, it's a gentleman who won the attorney general seat, Republican, and he got on the air last night at his party to, and publicly thanked Mitch McConnell and the GOP head honcho for the support that he did. It was an Amos and Andy moment. Okay.
I feared that. Going to ask if it was a Candace Owens type or a Michael Steele type. It's like some Republicans sit down and break bread with.
Yeah, Michael Steele has actually come around, and he is persona non grata in the GOP, but he's calling them out, which he's supposed to, because they pushed him out.
Yeah, after they dissed him, But he was down with him big time back in the day when he thought they were his boys.
Yes, he was.
And he wasn't even trying. Yeah. I saw an interview with him. He wasn't even trying to give Obama any props for being the president, black president. He did. He said something in the interview, I'm paraphrasing. He's like, he's the president, but I'm the head of the Republican Party. So, whole vibe was like, I got mine too.
Back in 2000, when they were trying to integrate the party and make it more relevant, because they realized that it was a little too white, Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice, both of them. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say Colin Powell didn't go down like Michael Steele and Condoleezza Rice.
Oh, no. But in the beginning, they were trying to galvanize or attract more people of color to the party, and never worked. I knew back in when we covered the 2000 convention, and your mom was there. I mean, she, we rubbed shoulders with people that felt that, the Republicans had a different spin compared to, they were poo-pooing, the accomplishments of the Democrats with the civil rights movement, housing, the empowerment programs and things like that. And they said that, they realized that there has been a success on that level with the party. They wanted to provide a balance so that they could, attract more people of color, and it just didn't seem to work. They managed to grab a few Latinos, but, if anything, you know, I think that community has learned its lesson, certainly in the last 3 years, if anything, you know, and even some, you know, are still standing in lockstep, but I don't understand, you know, why that goes on. But, you know, until they get clocked in the head, they'll see what goes on. But I think as soon as the hearings hit the air and people are taking the time to watch this thing like as if it's a prize fight, I just think the tables are going to turn. You know,
absolutely.
And as I said, it's embarrassing. You know, I would not even want to. I wouldn't even want to be a member of the family and try to defend. You know, what's wrong is wrong, is right is right. My family knows that. I am not hesitant to speak my mind when I see something wrong, and I'm not saying anything with regard to anyone. I love my family, but it is what it is, you know, and I think that applies with everybody. It's just one of those things. So it's shameful, real shameful.
Yeah, I don't think that clearly that's not the value system that certainly that family has, nor is it the value system that a great many people in the world and certainly within the Republican Party have. So, I mean, you know, we're dealing with individuals that have a totally different, their value system is as it helps them and as it promotes their agenda, what they want out of life. So, you know, it's not surprising. It's surprising just how, and I guess it's not really surprising to what lengths they'll go. It is surprising that they have the arrogance to figure anything, whatever old BS they come up with, everybody's just going to go along with it. No matter, it's like I'm saying.
Yeah.
No matter how outlandish, no matter how obvious the lie, no matter how clearly you are breaking the law, you've abused your power. And I suppose, you know, what else is the sun going to say? What else are people who are in too deep going to say at this point? They have to ride it out, you know, and certainly someone like the guy's son, who probably has an inferiority complex, the whole never living up to daddy and all that other stuff that was alleged to be part of their relationship, he's going to have it most of all. But, you know, all of them. I mean, they got Pompeo's guy that was right underneath him that resigned because he disagreed with Pompeo going along with the lies. So, I mean, you know, it's like
about a seminal moment.
yeah. You know, it's like, well, how much further are you going to go? You know, people talk about Giuliani used to be this great prosecutor at one time. Well, look at him now. I mean, I don't know if he was or wasn't. Maybe he was, but doing his thing. But look at him now. Look what he's chosen to do.
Well, to me, it was always there. This is his moment to really. You know, my good friend Peter Noel published a book some years ago saying, and the title was, Why Blacks Fear America's Mayor, you know. And,
what was
Why Black People Fear America's. I don't have the, I'm giving you a paraphrase because I don't remember the exact title. But that was the gist of it. And, you know, I'm certain if you were to go online, you could look it up. And the deal is that there's so much rich history with Rudy when it comes to people in our community and the different things that, you know, that he did. I remember one night before he became mayor, he called me at midnight begging me to get on the air to counter some of the things that were going on in the Dinkins campaign just to see that – you know, that we were fair and balanced at that time. And I'll never forget it. I mean, I didn't even know how he got my home phone number to do that. But, you know, he ran the Eastern District. I guess it's pretty easy to get access to private numbers at that particular time. And I'll never forget the police demonstration he led downtown Manhattan. You know, all these cops, at least 5,000 white cops, to embarrass Mayor Dinkins. You know, and any member of the city council who were people of color, you know, because he didn't agree with their agenda when it came to contracts and stuff like that. And so it goes, you know. I mean, this man is anybody who's got the ability to announce a divorce at a freaking news conference, and pardon my French, you know, without letting his wife know, who he's currently married to, that he was looking to divorce her. I mean, has stones. I mean, really. But it just typifies.
I don't know if that would call it has stones. I don't know if I would call it that. I would call it him being an asshole. I don't know.
Without question,
having stones
and he got Dominic Carter suspended over that crap, and I'll never forget that. You know, I mean, I'm sorry that at the time the New York Press Corps did not stand up for what was going on. You know, because I mean, the deal is obviously there was something going on that people were aware of, and again. You know, even this morning, and depending upon where you saw the interview, I think that some of our people who are asking pertinent questions, you can't just give people like a Donald Jr. and a Rudy Giuliani a microphone and a camera and let them just riff without correcting their stuff, you know? Again, if I could just start a podcast on factcheck.com, you know, it would be just, I would love to do that every time I hear something that just sounds, you know, incoherent, makes no sense, and it's not true. But the way they come off with it, you know, it just amazes me. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they followed the beat of the Fox network. And not everybody at Fox is that way, but, you know, they blur the lines between journalism and advocacy. And it is what it is. I just hope it doesn't lead to a civil war. There's a lot of people out here who just don't know.
You got some idiots like Rand Paul who is going to, if not already, I read one source said he's already released the name of the whistleblower. You've got Trump's son outing the whistleblower. You know, these are the kinds of things that I believe the American public is about to really find out just how corrupt this administration truly is. They only get the notions of impropriety as maybe when they become fact, and you got to say one thing about the American television public, they have watched enough CIA, NCI, Perry Mason. We got enough cop shows, judge shows.
And like those TV shows, you have to tell the story for people. And so until you do that, they're not going to get it. So when these dudes come out and release the names of the whistleblower, then you have to present the context to the people of why that is such a horrendous, illegal, wrong thing to do. If people don't know the rules, then they're not going to know what's the big deal. And that's what I'm saying about the Democratic Party constantly, over and over again. Never get capitalizing on pointing these big things, these really obvious things out to people, man. People have got to know, just like the whole inquiry thing. Let's take a vote on inquiry, and the Republicans challenge a vote on inquiry. Okay, now we're going to vote. Then the Republicans, you know, they come back all aghast. Are you going to vote? Yes, cats, you asked us to vote. But then they go down the narrative. They try to establish the narrative of, well, the voting is unfair and the system is unfair. Well, that's because people don't know the system. They know the system,
that's
but the American public doesn't know. So they're describing, establishing what the system is. The system is, that's the way it's supposed to work. That's how it works. But the average person doesn't know that until the Democrats say, no, this is how the system works. It's like a grand jury presented here. They're not allowed in. They're allowed in when it goes to a jury in the Senate. That's the way you present it in the proper context. And then you're setting it up for when the Senate rejects it, being all Republicans. Then you could point to the people and say, see, look. And then when people start drawing their own conclusions by that third act of the storyline, they can start to see who the real villains are, like always in those shows. But until we create let everybody know the context, it's not going to work. And this is what we always do.
Yeah.
Democrats always do that.
It's the paramount part of which and literally the control of the media is the Democrats' number one main thrust at this very moment. They must control the message. They must look at it as if it's a television show, because that's what he's looking at it as. Go walk in down in his lane, and relative to, like you say, let's break this up into acts. First act, second act, third act. The closing act is, in this game, the end game of impeachment is impeachment. And the more we start moving that that measure of the bar to understand this is not just picked behind door number ones, two, and three. This game is for keeps. And the Democrats have to keep pushing it as if it's the war game. And this is how you're going to defeat him. You're in Mitch McConnell's backyard. You're saying and showing the public that the truth is what they're after. These Americans who showed up in voting yesterday were sending a very loud message. And it didn't matter whether it was a red state or a blue state. Look at the count of the votes. Look at the major cities that previously in the 2016 election did not show up. They showed up in this particular time. And this is, what, another whole year before we even get to the presidential election? We're in for a huge display of power based in the Democratic Party. And you notice the field is winnowing away. We have the Cinderella guy, Beto O'Rourke. Good run, Beto. You brought some issues to the table, but it's not your time. Okay? This is not your time. We got you have to eliminate the weak, so that the strength of the Democratic Party is who's going to run in the two slots, number one, number two. Get to it, roll it, and stop. Don't play with it this time, because you played with it the last time. You could have won if Bernie was on the ticket, but you didn't put him on the ticket. That was, like you said,
right,
Eric. They were playing to keep from winning. Okay.
Yeah, Bernie. Listen, on that ticket,
I
wasn't
good.
Yeah.
I just got a text from Peter Noel, and he's on the line. I think he thinks I control it from this end. Is he calling into you? Can you see Eric from where you are?
Yeah, there's no. He's probably listening online. He's not listening where he's called.
All right. Yeah, it would be great, you know. And I just got his text.
Yeah, if he wants to call in.
Yeah, I don't
want
to put his number on the air, so, you know.
Hold on.
Wait.
If you're listening, you could call in at 323-679-09 at 0906. That's 323-679-0906. That's the call-in number for people who want to make comments. So if you'd like to call in, and you'd have to call that number. Otherwise, if you're hearing the poem, if he's able to hear the show, he's probably listening via the internet and gone onto our page at blogtalkradio.com. So,
gotcha.
I'm
sorry.
But yeah,
Atlanta is going to be the site. Atlanta is going to be the site where Trump unveils his Black Voter Drive initiative. He is going into the home base of Miss Abrams. And I can tell you, if he thought he got booed at the Madison Square Garden, at the World Series in D.C., he's in for a very rude awakening. Atlanta just happens to be the seat of the Black Power base right now, all up and down. Politically, you got the mayor, the vice, the chair, the president of the city council. You got Tyler Perry, and he's going to go down there and drop a voter drive initiative. He's looking for a thumping, and he will get one, because these voters are not going to give him the support he thinks he got. His base is going to continue to run the same stupid stuff that they've been running, and God bless them for being stupid, because they're going to show you just how more stupid that they can be, okay? And while the fires are burning, okay, while we have the Wall Street is barely chirping along, you know, so all of this economic grandiose stance that they've been taking, that bubble is about to burst as well. So you got to keep piling on.
Because of what he did. That's the ironic
thing
about, they want to talk about the economy like it is his accomplishment.
Yeah.
And once again, the short memories, they forgot that Obama, they want to forget Obama, put the economy back on the track, was on track slowly. That's why it's been moving slow, because it takes time to come before you get ahead of the steam. But, of course, your boy comes along and gives tax breaks to the top 1% and messes the economy up again. So the one thing that they tried to point to, which he didn't earn, which he didn't fix, which he didn't build, even though they were riding off of Obama fixing it, now he done destroyed that. So, you know, part of their lies, then the lie about the thing, and then the stuff they're lying about, or the lies they built up, come crashing down upon the lie that they told originally.
Absolutely. So it's an encouraging sign, Wayne, and ultimately think about this far out, and you're starting to see red states where their votes were overwhelming for the election. Now the suburbs are turning it around. And the city, once again, they're not going to admit it, but the black vote increased this time in areas that they kept talking about, areas around Cincinnati. Well, Cincinnati's in Ohio. But it's at the edge of Kentucky, and they were talking about how the cities were starting to turn out. And I'm thinking, this is interesting, because before, those were the swing states that won and gave the president the victory by 1% or less than that. You see, that's what we have to continue to look at, because their base is going to continue. They're going to be the same place that they were in 2016. What's not going to be the same is the independents and those who thought that by voting for a television personality that they were going to get that show, that game show. No. So what you got was a house of thugs.
We did get the game show. We were all fired by the game show. That's the problem.
It's sad. Those that were in the camp of Republicans anyway were, you know, that's not the best camp to be in to have begun with, especially coming out of the previous 8 years. But what makes it even further is that, like you said, that base, his base is going to be there. That's going to be a solid number. And these numbers for the Democrats and independents indicate an increase in voter turnout is what you're saying. And that's what, you know, the lack of turnout is what killed us in the last election. You know, a lot of people didn't turn out, didn't want to go vote. Bernie Sanders fans didn't go because he wasn't there. People didn't like Hillary. All this stuff that people chose away or made up some BS excuse to not vote, you know, is changing now. And people are saying, I think they're saying they have to get out and vote, and we have to increase, get back up to those levels. And also, I'm hoping that, and they had a poll that says there's a large percentage of people who feel that Trump could possibly win a re-election, even though that same high percentage doesn't want him to win re-election. Maybe that means people will realize we can't just beat him. We got to whip his ass. So we can't just beat him.
Exactly.
We got to beat them and run up the score on them. You know, because you have to allow for the margin of error. You got to allow for the margin of trickery and cheating and corruption, you know.
Yes.
So you got to allow for all these margins. So, you know, hopefully people get the message that, no, we really got to turn out and really whoop his butt undeniably, so there's no question about it. There's nobody can make no deal out of it, because that's the only way that there'll be a possibility that he'll leave the White House in a peaceful manner.
And here's something else, gentlemen. Here's something to reflect upon. He not just didn't get a good thumping. He lost a state which was the capital of the Confederacy. Come on now. We got to put all this into historical context, guys. This is generational ass-whipping, okay? And he called it upon himself, like you said, and it's going to continue because I'm telling you, the public's pulse is saying they've had enough of all of it. And even in D.C., there was that air of, oh, this is not going to happen. We're going to have to just accept 4 more years. Let me just tell you, the talking heads last night, all up and down the East Coast, were talking about they kicked his butt. It was an embarrassment in Kentucky. Okay, that's what they were saying all day long.
And when you juxtapose his appearance there the night before and the things he was saying, compared to what goes on today, the outcome, it was a salient message, you know?
Yes.
And it's just one of those things. But, again, I respect protocol, but if Peter's listening, I have no control over this. If you could just kindly give that number out again, because my cell phone's... all messed up, Eric.
The number is 323-679-0906. That's 323-679-0906. So if he's listening, I don't even know if he's. Do you know if he's listening or he's just trying to get?
Yeah. Well, the
you.
Thing is, he said he was standing by and plus one. And then my cell froze. So
I'm not showing any other calls. I'm not showing any other calls that have.
All right. Well, we tried. That's it.
So before we got a couple more minutes. The movie Harriet came out this weekend.
Yes.
And there's a little bit of controversy behind it, at least online, and some cats I was talking to about, and I don't know if we broached the subject or if I broached it with somebody else, about the concept of a lot of these historic African-American figures from history being played seemingly as of late by actors of African descent but from Europe. And I think what made it even probably a little bit more piqued that story idea a little bit more was that the woman playing Harriet was alleged to have said some derogatory or condescending things about African Americans. So a couple of friends of mine and I were on our Facebook. Some active friends of mine were on Facebook talking about raising the notion that, you know, potentially taking work from African-American actors. And, the discussion is going back and forth. My personal perspective about that is they're taking work from African-American actors, but B, that's the nature of the business. We've taken work from them. But the real issue, I believe, is that what happens when you have an actor, a black person with a, for all intents and purposes, a European-sounding accent, and they walk into an office of producers or agents or people that are in a position to give jobs in the business, they seem exotic, in my opinion, to these individuals. They seem different than the Negroes they have over here or they're used to dealing with every day here. They seem a little bit more familiar, a little bit more, dare I say it, European. So what happens when you have a Negro with an accent like that, I think that it perhaps opens doors for some of these people to get agents, to get managers, and to be in positions. And I just will point out to the example of my man Idris Elba on The Wire, which was really the role that made him a star. And he was playing Stringer Bell. And every brother off the corner straight up thought that he was off the corner himself until they actually heard the brother talk and heard this British accent. It was like, wow, he did his thing. He had me thinking that he was from 125 and St. Nick, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But in that, since that being the case, I know 100 brothers from 125th and St. Nick that are actors that could have done that same thing. So, therein lies the dilemma. Some people were getting a little bit upset about the lack of work, and some others weren't. But it is a particular big discussion going back and forth.
And we have to resolve that. I'm not in that end of the profession the way you two are. But it is an issue. I mean, I look at this young lady who I didn't get to see the film yet, Motherless Brooklyn, which is supposed to be blowing up the screens. I think it came out this week. And she is of African descent, a mixed parentage, you know. And when you hear her speak, I think she grew up in Great Britain. But, you know, she plays that Brooklyn role very well. And you know, I mean, I feel to a certain extent that our community needs to embrace and provide more work. But at the same time, this is a subtle divide and conquer game that goes on. And you all know that better than me. And again, as I have this moment publicly, Eric, I apologize for blowing up your phone the other night with the Byron Allen piece, which almost sort of correlates with what we're talking about but in terms of economic inclusion, you know, in a roundabout way, you know. I was taken back by
not really, but good.
Hold on, because here's the piece that's not, y'all haven't mentioned this as yet, but here's the other half of the story, as they used to say on radio. Now for the rest of the story. Comcast owns the rights to Harriet. Okay.
Oh.
So it's not just the actress. That's the shade. Underneath this, and this is really serious, is the conversation and discussion that on November the 13th, argued before the Supreme Court, will be an attempt by Comcast and a friend of the court, the Justice Department, to roll back the 1866 Civil Rights Act. Do you know what that would do? Now, yes, Byron Allen wants to be a part of the milieu, and God bless him, he's got the billions of dollars to walk into the arena. That's, they don't want him to have the 11th station he wanted to purchase that would have bought up a piece of Sinclair's cable business, Sinclair's out there in the Midwest, and that's a very right-wing group. Byron Allen bought the Weather Channel. You may recall he wanted to buy a piece of Birth of a Nation, but was outbid on that. So,
this is a separate issue from what I initially was talking about, but go ahead.
And so the issue of the actress comes up as a potential sideshow when the real show is that, yes, Comcast owns a piece of Harriet. So now here we are, $12 million box office that exceeded the expectations of the producing company, so that now you got a hit on your hand, and now it's Comcast getting ready to go up against Byron Allen, and we've got an issue that's bigger than Comcast's Byron Allen and Harriet. It's try to repeal the 1866 Civil Rights Act.
Right, I was familiar with that. Separate issue from the initial question, but the Byron Allen, concept, and certainly the discrimination they've been showing them. As a matter of fact, you know, as you guys probably know, since we're in that area, that Kamala Harris filed the amicus brief to the Supreme Court in support of Byron Allen's thing. I know Congressman Payne was one of the ones that signed on to it, as well as a number of other Black Caucus members. But, certainly that is how they're able to control, certainly, the product and keep us out of the mix of because they weren't running a number of his shows on their stations, too, which was also part of that lawsuit, I believe, you know?
Yeah. No, I was in a vacuum about him. I've watched him over the years. You know, I've seen some of his material, you know. Never thought he was that progressive in his thinking until I heard the excerpt of the Breakfast Club show that morning, and in fact I didn't even hear it live. Somebody blew up my phone at midnight. When I got a chance to watch it, I said, "Oh, expletive! Let me call Eric or text you."
I've been aware of that. I told you the other night, I've been aware of that for a minute that he's been up fighting that fight. You know, and it's one, you know, like you said, it's a bigger issue. It's the element of race, how it connects, it gets into, seeps into every aspect of the life that we have to lead. Because even in, you know, what I was talking about with the British actors versus African-American actors and the work that's there for African-Americans, is that's the racism seeping in there, right?
Exactly.
The fact that it has to be, there has to be one or the other, or the fact that just the fact that some of them come over and they sound more familiar or make some of the white folks that run the business, those areas of the business, feel a little bit more comfortable because they have that European accent. You know what I mean? That's a little bit of that inherent bias that they might have towards African Americans, because we're not talking with a Cockney accent, and it's not
right.
That kind of, you know, that exotic thing that happens when you hear someone with an accent. Certainly the type of accent that you wouldn't expect them to have.
Well, how do you bridge the gap? Because in some instances when I see this, I think of, you know, my Caribbean brethren out there that...
Somebody has some paper or sweeping or whatever. If you could hold that a little further away from the phone, because we can really hear it loudly. Go ahead.
All right. No, I was just saying because, you know, it reminded me the divisiveness sometimes that I see between African Americans and African Caribbean people, you know, in terms of going after the same things, wanting to seem like as if they're part of the process here. And we can't afford to have divisions anymore. You know, we should never have had divisions to begin with, you know, in terms of anybody of color. And anyone who buys into this thing that, you know, you think you're better because you come from somewhere else on the planet doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to be subjected to the same level of racism once you arrive. And it's a bitter pill to swallow. I argue with my friends all the time, you know, wherever I go and I have a chance to talk about it, because, the problems that we went through way back when you juxtapose that with the struggles of 400 years of degradation, racism, and the mental racism and slavery that we're going through now, you know, there's no comparison. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, usually if we have a head cold here, you're suffering from the flu over there. But at the same time, there's still a balance or freedom that you get there that you don't have here, you know, even though it may be a little harder. The lifestyle might be a little easier, but, you know, we have to learn to how to – there's got to be some formula put together that stuff like that, you know, it's called out when Comcast does something like this, or when production companies seek to – you know, instead of getting someone authentically from the community as opposed to, you know, trying to get somebody who could speak the lingo or come up with an accent, I could feign this and feign that. No disrespect to those who have the ability to do that, you know?
We're talking about kind of a corporate bias, a corporate kind of system of white supremacy and putting that into effect. And we're also talking about the inherent subconscious bias that people have against African Americans, and that's where it manifests itself in something as simple as preferring blacks with a non-American accent or non-traditional African American accent, preferring those type of blacks as opposed to blacks who are actual African Americans with a traditional African American accent, whatever that entails, and whichever dialect, part of the African American diaspora dialect in America that it is. It's still the racism across the board. It just affects us in all of these various areas and arenas. I'm wondering if either one of you, as we get ready to go out another 6 minutes, have gotten a chance to see Dolomite, which I have not, or maybe you guys saw the original back in the day.
Oh, I
what
remember
is your,
the original.
What is your, that was going to be my next question. What is your recollection of the original Dolomite? I know that might have been
as blue
a little bit more
as blue
than mine.
Can get. but
can we turn down that background music or the background sound?
Sure.
That's not me.
Sure. That's me. the one thing about the Dolomite, back in the Blue period, you had Red Fox. You had, Dolomite.
Explain the Blue period.
The Blue period is when record companies went to do comedy, 33 albums, and they were highlighting and showcasing those comics who told blue jokes, sex jokes, jokes that were very blue and crude.
Adult humor.
At the top of the adult humor, and at the top of the adult humor crowd, you had people like Red Fox, Peg Leg Bates, Susie and for which Moms Mabley came out of. I mean, there's a whole category of comics who told blue jokes. Lenny Bruce, for those on the white side, they may recall, was as blue as they get. But Dolomite took it to another whole level because he was the pimp's pimp, okay? And he was funny. And it took and you had to go with the humor because it was the kind of humor you would hear at a juke joint. Be drinking at the bar, Robin Harris told blue jokes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But Dolomite was, and this is a good move for Eddie. I mean, they're shooting that, three different films down at Tyler Perry Studios. Coming Back to America 2, Dolomite, and I can't think of the other movie, but it's like what we are in seeing
Bad Boys
is
3.
The proliferation, right, Bad Boys 2, well, 3. So what we're seeing is the opportunity for which Byron Allen, Tyler Perry, Oprah Winfrey, TV One are leading the path of redistributing the entertainment dollar coming out of the African American community. It's a beautiful thing, and you're talking about building a Black Wall Street. That's why I say if Trump is going to go to Atlanta to engage and initiate his Black Voter Initiative, he's about to get his ass truly thumped. And it couldn't happen at a better time, okay? I mean, Stacey Abrams is engaging a get-out-the-vote campaign. So he's walking into the fire pit. We love it. Bring your ass on in there so we can do a barbecue on you, okay? Because that's what's going to happen.
I couldn't understand why you went to one of the historically Black colleges to speak, but I guess he got some money or maybe
got
somebody
Trump
got paid.
Too.
Yeah, he did,
So, I mean, this is how you're going to have to beat him. You're just going to have to beat his ass down until he says enough is enough. And I can tell you, if I were rolling the dice right now, you'd be seeing 7s and 11s popping up on the board. And they know it, the GOP knows it. The Democratic Party better know it, because if they think they can let up right now, no. The Congress gets back in session, and these public moments of the truth coming out is going to continue to roll the dice towards the blue wave. It's coming
in
front of our faces.
You get the last. There it is, Byron. You get the last word, brother. Tell the people's your send off as we go into this last minute countdown.
Peace and love always, and remember, if you're not part of the solution, you are the problem. Get out and vote. You're a witness to the miracle happening every single day. Our votes count.
Brother Byron Saunders. Talk to you again, Brother Byron. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely, my
brother Wayne Gilman.
I just want to concur a thousand percent with Byron. Keep hope alive. I ask for your prayers, and keep it moving until next week.
All right, Wayne Gilman. Good night, sir. All right, this has been the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for listening to Kay Thompson Live. I'm the Sun, Citizen Payne. You can listen to us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. We're also archived. See you again next week. Love you, Ma.